Vigo's having to operate even more attackingly now. He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Vigo. Goes for goal. Oh, what a goal. Hiratoshi Nakata with a scream.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 22 of the Box to Box podcast. It's been quite a week in football. There's been some highs, there's been some lows. We'll do our best to have a nuanced, mature debate about all of this. Today, I'm joined by the real Mr. Hurt by Football, although he won't claim that that name is his own, Kush.
You're stealing my... Every time you do this, you're stealing it. Like, this is your title. I'm not going to live with it. I'm sorry, but you have to own it.
I'm just saying the group chat says different, Mr. I can't enjoy what's going on right now in the Premier League. Just saying.
I did enjoy Sunday, but yeah.
And his brother, Sat. Sat, how you doing? I know we would refer to you as a miserable bastard, but I don't think that's appropriate on a podcast. So,
hey, the podcast.
The wiser, the podcast is a place for truth. Senior head of the family.
The podcast is a place for truth, so I think miserable bastard.
How are you doing?
Not bad, guys, not bad. Thanks.
No worries. We'll dive straight into it. So this weekend, obviously, we saw United have quite a heavy defeat. It's not the heaviest, I don't think, in the Premier League. That would be 2-9-0 scorelines, but it's up there to the rivals, of course. And looking at the kind of build-up to the match and a lot of what ex-United players who are pundits or work every now and then as pundits were saying, is it time that maybe we have a discussion about whether pundits are actually being nuanced and fair enough in terms of giving opinions, or they're just actually paid fanboys?
I can take that. I mean, we've had numerous conversations around that. And I think if you lean in, well, one of my hot takes was I think it's time that TV and media basically have a balanced opinion for once. And by that, it may be kind of drastic, but invite every like one legend or one pundit from every single football club and get them involved in conversation when matches happen between them. It's kind of a short take, but yeah, that's kind of my view, you know, just in summary as to what I think has been going on. And I totally agree with your point around, you know, how narratives have completely changed over the course of a week. But we'll let the head of family take a stance on this and we can probably debate it. But yeah, that was kind of my hot take around that area. Or
well, why do you guys make me sound like Dominic Toretto?
I mean, just for, you know, you wouldn't mind the whole older and wiser kind of line, but okay, sorry, we'll get rid of that one. Gosh, cut that out in the edit.
So no, look, I'm with you here. Like, so I kind of understand where we're coming from with regard to a bit more, the view needs to be a bit more balanced, right? And we're seeing it more and more in the Premier League analysis that we see on Sky. So, you know, I mean, Gosh, your point of having people who have I say allegiances with one of the teams that join that are playing sort of thing makes sense. So you have more of a balanced view. The thing is that I think it's a weird one, right? So I think from an analysis point of view, do you guys sort of turn this into a question? Do you guys see the same kind of issue with BT analysis or Amazon analysis compared to Sky analysis?
CJ can take that. I think you have a view.
I'd say no, it's a bit more nuanced. And although I know I've seen the group chat, we've discussed about when it comes to VAR and some of the decisions and what some of the comments have been made about VAR decisions, not only this season, but in the past. But I do find myself now sometimes actually just trying to find streams. I mean, I never watch football illegally, don't know what you mean, from other countries, just because it's a bit less partisan. Because I think the best example of this is on Sunday, with Souness saying, oh, I think Liverpool have a chance. and you've got Gary Neville and Rory Keane openly laughing on the opposite side of the presenter. And at what stage do we get from someone being able to share an expression to just it being so kind of openly, well, I'm in this camp, I'm in that camp? And that's the thing that I think we have to work on. I mean, Gary Neville refused to go on to Monday Night Football because of the defeat.
Apparently,
I should know better, I've done journalism. Apparently, he refused to turn up because of the defeat. And I understand the argument, right, that, okay, United are the most successful team in terms of Premier League, I think, wins and, like, in general, in the Premier League since 92. But I don't think that means it's kind of a blank sheet to just always have United pundits on. Because the same way that there's an Emil Heskey on TV or Troy Deeney, like, I think they kind of end up gatekeeping a bit. And we think, oh, because they're United legends, that somehow their view will be more important than someone playing in the modern game now. Because a lot of these pundits haven't played for 10 plus years, but we still kind of take what they put forward as somehow being modern or balanced
views. My question is, so on that point around, firstly, we know Liverpool and United are like media darlings in terms of the British game, right? Does that basically mean that because they've propped up two of their most famous, well, you call them legends. Yeah, they are legends, Carragher and Neville. But you can clearly see a difference between the two. Like Carragher, I think, is a bit more balanced in his view. He's a bit more, I mean, obviously, when it comes to Liverpool, he's obviously going to stand in their corner. But I don't know. Personally, I can see a difference. So does that basically feed into the entertainment factor and the Premier League? Is that basically?
Okay.
Do you see what I mean? It adds that tribalistic value because those two clubs are like so big.
I mean, it does, but I think to the average person, right? I mean, we know the context of this, but I think if you're someone that's new to football, you just kind of, if you're taking it, and it's the problem, right? Whether it's successful or not, I still don't think necessarily those pundits that are on TV know the best or have the best opinions. Like, we know with Roy Keane, for instance, he's always going to give the, there wasn't enough passion. They didn't care enough. There was no hunger. If I was on the pitch, that wouldn't be happening. I'd have taken him out type thing. And obviously that works, right? Sky do that. They get clicks, they get views, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's to the detriment of helping people that, okay, we might look at football quite a lot more than the average person. But I also think the average person now cares a lot more about the tactics behind football than maybe 10, 15 years ago. And we need to do better. Like you said, pundits, media.
It's exactly what you said in terms of the game has completely changed now. Like, it's been, what, they stopped playing in the 2005, 2006 time. And it's, the game has evolved so fast in the last 20 years or so that you need someone more modern or, I don't know. I'm surprised there's no data analyst as well, like on screen. Do you know what I mean? Like just adding that different opinion and backed by stats. But yeah, I think it's time. Things have to change. I don't know. That's my personal view on it. And you know why.
And here's a question for you. So obviously tribalism in sport is what makes sport sport. Not fully, but that forms a part of it. Do you think if we were to introduce more balance, that would affect how we view games?
Okay, so you say we, right? So I'm just going to cut in here one sec, sorry. So you say we. Now, we support Arsenal, right? And essentially, if we had a more balanced view, I'd probably say it wouldn't change how much more or less I watch. Whether, you know, the big issue is whether it's available and for a cheap price, you know, long term. But essentially, I'm not watching the game for the analysis. I'm watching the game for the game, right? However, right, I see your point, Kush, about the data analyst, right? I think that's interesting. I think the thing is it doesn't give you clicks and views as much as, say, for example, Referee Watch, which sort of came in, what, this season properly? Because right? That's basically some stuff that they can use to generate attention, right? So you can keep the fire of the game going way after the game is finished. So part of it is definitely down to, like, entertainment value, right? So I think that's where we come from an analysis, you know, standpoint. The other thing is, obviously, there are certain analysts who actually do that job really well, right? So like Micah Richards, I really like him. I think he's very balanced, despite having allegiances to Man City. But maybe I like him because he's actually, what is he, an Arsenal fan or something like that. So maybe I like him because of that. I also think that Gary Neville was a lot better before the last couple of seasons. I thought he was a lot more impartial in that sense, as an example. And, you know, this is always going to be there, right? So having a United sort of backed analyst or a Liverpool backed analyst, you're, like you said, Carl, you're appealing to the biggest fan base in the UK.
Right? Probably in the world as well.
Yeah, if that, I mean, obviously Real Madrid aside and all that kind of stuff. But yes, absolutely. There's definitely some worldwide appeal, right? So I think it's definitely like attention and click driven kind of thing. So like it's can you keep attention high? And with these guys and their opinions, maybe that's what's happening. And the other thing that I think we may come on to, I don't know if we've covered it as well, is that do you want professional players in that analysis arena kind of thing? And I'd say yes, because they explain the game in a different way, right? So not like, it's the same as like, for example, it's not the same if you, me, or Kosho Ade kind of go in. I mean, obviously, some of us are very good at what we do in terms of analysis and so on. But it's not like we're going to give you the same perspective if you're a viewer. So, you know, I don't see it changing long term, and I get it.
Fair point.
That's a fair point. Welcome, Ade, to the pod, friend of the pod.
Hello.
Featured contributor of the pod.
Greetings. How is all?
Not bad, not bad. Just to catch up, we were just talking about the role of pundits in football, and do we think it can get better, or how it should get better. So that was the eloquent speech by Sat just now.
Got it. That does make sense. I mean, I would be interested to hear what the other takes were, if it was Sat the first person to flip his take on that.
I mean, it's not...
We're all aligned, aren't we?
It's not common that Sat tries to hog the limelight when he's here, so...
Apologies.
No, I was just, basically one of my take, I mean, CJ can probably expand on this as he's Mr. Host today as well. It's just that things need to change. And I think, like, if you're going to have people with a bit of tribalism, you know, it contributes to the game, but then have a legend or a pundit from every single club that is represented on, you know, in terms of analysis, that should give you a balanced view and, you know, gives each club a balanced perspective. Because I don't know, I'm getting tired of the narratives and the one voice that keeps coming up. And as much as it's annoying, one name I'd put in the hat, like Simon Jordan, he's like polarizing, but some of the takes he has and the insight he has around the game, I don't think anyone has that insight. And it's really fascinating to hear. So that's kind of what I was basing my opinion around. And yeah, feel free to chip in, Ade, and then Mr. CJ, the host, can take over and dictate what his next question.
I think for me, with this whole conversation about punditry, the problem, I think I'm a little bit more understanding of the situation as it stands now, in the sense of that. For me, one of the biggest issues is the whole bias element and the fact that you have people from previous teams talking about and analysing the game and kind of commentating on the game. But I think that happens in every single country and in every single place. I've had the luxury of living in Holland and watching them cover Premier League games, and the bias when Dutch players are around or in the game is just the same as kind of you see biases where people have allegiances to teams here. So I think the fact that they're humans who've been part of football to some capacity is always going to be a part of things that, you know, how can I put it, impacts how they cover the sport and their opinions on the sport in itself. And yeah, it's something we're going to have to deal with. As annoying it is, it's something that is a part of football. I think what I would like to see a bit more, and I know I'm going off on a tangent here, so sorry, but I think what I would like to see a bit more is them leaning into the fact that they're humans and trying to do a little bit more. Like, I get so jealous when I watch American coverage of the Premier League. I know that's probably blasphemy to say that, but and European competitions, because they embrace the fact that they're humans and kind of go around the subject and get them to speak a bit more, and you get to build up a like for the character that is going behind the punditry. Whereas here, they try and keep it all football. They don't go into the character, so that when these biases do come out, you're kind of like, you're looking at them as a part of a club as opposed to an individual, if that makes sense. So, but I don't think, I don't know, my whole two pence on the whole thing is, I think there's never going to be a way we can kind of improve unless if you want to keep the football route, you start involving the people who are actually on the pitch to reveal some of their secrets. Like, I think some questions or interviews have asked players questions about the tactical setups, and I think they're exploiting a few young players to try and get into their minds as to how they were told by the manager to play and what they were told to do at certain points in the game. I think that type of punditry, when we're keeping it football, is best because it's impartial and it's focusing on the what wins the games and the minor details. But ultimately, these people who aren't part of the clubs just commentating, yeah, there's always going to be that bias. But tangent, that's my tangent over. But that's what I think. I think, yeah, it's a problem that we're not going to see change anytime soon.
All tangents are welcome. This is a safe space. Please share your views. No, you raise a fair point. Like, I think probably where this leaves us is it's the evolution of punditry and where it goes from here. Because, I mean, we've had examples where you've had fans alongside pros and they're talking about sports and stuff. And I personally think that might be a more interesting way to get people a bit more into it. Because I can think of a lot of people that just don't bother listening to punditry because they just can't be bothered to deal with it. So, like you said, you know, maybe looking at the more human elements or the tactics behind it. But I think the way that we've had things, especially this season, and like Sat said, Gary Neville has shown himself seems quite a good pundit. But this season, he's definitely seen to be a bit more biased and impartial. I mean, and I think that's affecting how he's generally viewed by a lot of people. So, yeah, I think, yeah, I'd say to summarize, probably we don't quite have an answer for what will happen next, but something needs to change. And I think that's probably a fair way to tie that up and move on to the next point. Now, speaking of which, now that the three horse race has now become a two horse race all over again, here's my controversial, mildly controversial take this week, which is the relegation battle more interesting than actually what's going on in the top half of the table? And the reason why I say this is because there's about 9 points, I think. Let me double check. Okay, there's 6 points that separate 12th and 20th. So do we think we're actually having a very good Premier League season, just maybe not in the way that a lot of people might be noticing?
Yeah.
And please feel free, anyone, to answer that.
Yeah, I can go first, and I'll pass on to Sat. But yeah, I agree with your take, CJ. I think... With the top of the league, I mean, obviously with Arsenal in that sort of title picture, it's a bit more unpredictable and it's something new, which is great. However, the rest of the thing, I mean, it's kind of falling into shape. Newcastle were a breath of fresh air, but at the same time, state-backed. So it's kind of like, you know, kind of a given, but you have to give Eddie Howe some sort of credit to some extent. As much as you probably don't agree with that, CJ, I'm sure. And then you have... you know, Fulham and Brighton kind of taking up the rest of the space with Brentford. The funny part is Chelsea, you know, falling away, even with the money spent. But yeah, back to your point, I think the league is really competitive, but more importantly, the relegation battle is more entertaining due to the fact it's not your usual suspects. So it was, you know, Everton was supposed to be in a bottom half scrap, but nobody thought they were this bad. And then you have, who was I going to pick? Well, Wolves were involved to a certain extent. And now you have West Ham who are, I just don't know what they're doing. So these are pretty, you know, well-established Premier League clubs who have spent a lot and are now basically in that scrap. Leicester as well, falling back. Palace are on the edge too, knife edge in that sense. So yeah, I would tend to agree. It's more entertaining because... you know, established clubs are at the bottom, but I'll pass the potato to who wants to take it next.
I think I agree, but I think I agree with your point that the general league in total is just more entertaining. I mean, if you look at the points divide, you're right. The relegation battle was epic, but it almost feels like there's not a relegation battle because of the quality of each teams. It just feels like there's certain teams who need to try and get results. I know that sounds weird, but when, like, for example, watching Bournemouth play Arsenal, I didn't feel like, you know, back in the day, it used to feel like a team is actually fighting relegation and they've got one of those managers like Allardyce or Pulis who's going to try and, you know, long ball it until they keep it up. Now, teams are actually playing, and all over the league, teams are playing better football. So it just doesn't seem like the same relegation battles of old. It's just basically whoever's going to end up with the least points, not the worst team. But then looking all the way through the table, there's the different stories for each section of the league table. There's the kind of European hopefuls in sixth and seventh who are surprise names, Brighton, Fulham and Brentford. Surprise challengers for the Premier League, Arsenal, who weren't expected to be there. And up until, you know, this weekend, Man United. And then at the bottom, there's teams in the relegation battle that you didn't expect. So I think it's testament to the fact that the Premier League is actually one of basically the best league in the world that has such good quality that all over the table is competitive. And even when the bottom go to the top of the league, you actually don't know who's going to win. Whereas back in the day with relegation battles, despite these clubs fighting for survival, you could say that a better team at the top of the league could guarantee 3 points, but you can't guarantee 3 points anywhere. So I just think the whole league is just exciting this year.
Question, Ade, just on that, and then Sat, probably you can jump in if you're still there. But with that, you raise a good point around the bottom half of the table with, you know, these teams that, you know, they have their own stories and it's kind of like you don't feel like it's relegation. Is that because they're names that you don't associate with relegation, like West Ham and Everton and stuff, or they've spent heavily and you're just like, sooner or later, the quality?
It's probably a bit of both. Like, for example, we'd say Wolves are a part of this conversation towards the bottom. I just don't believe that their players, relegation and the people they have in their squad, it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't compute. Just the same as West Ham and, you know, like some of the teams, you know, Leicester, some of the players that if you reeled off their first 11s, they just don't sound like players that are going to be fighting relegation. And it's like, it's really made, means that this league is really like a battle for the best of the best. Like the quality that you have to have to stay in this league has just gone through the roof, which makes it exciting, I think. Because as I said, you can't have Paqueta, Bowen, all of these Benrahma in your squad. And to me, that doesn't sound like a team that should be in a relegation dogfight. So I think it's a bit of both for what you said. I just think that when you hear the quality, you just don't believe that it's a relegation dogfight. But ultimately, it can be said that it is, but it doesn't feel like the old ones.
Danny Ings as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys, I only have eyes on position one, position two right now. So for me, there's no other priority in terms of interest.
Thank you for your nuanced take there, sir.
Look, you're right, man. I don't think it's relegation as such for me. It's what Ade is saying. I think, well, actually, all of us have said it to some degree. The league has just become a lot more competitive. A lot more competitive. All the money that's gone into it, it's made everyone a lot closer, like in terms of brought everyone a lot closer from a competitiveness standpoint. And I think that's going to continue as long as the TV money keeps running. I think it'll continue. It's just made everything so much more watchable. Like Ade is saying, like, you never know. Like, who would have thought that Bournemouth would have actually scored to given Arsenal a bit of pressure over the week? Stuff didn't used to happen as often, you know, in previous seasons. But now it's happening more and more. And you had who was calling relegation battlers Wolves beating Spurs. So things are moving in a much more competitive manner, to be honest. And I suppose a lot of that then trickles down into the relegation fights and so on. Everybody wants to be a part of this, right? Despite whatever parachute payments you get, you still want to be on the biggest stage in the world.
It's very well said. It's very well said. Some good points put forward there. Can I just say in my defense, I don't think Eddie Howe is that bad. As in, I commend what he's done with Newcastle because they haven't gone about their spending in the same way that, say, City did when they first were taken over by anyone. And yeah, no, I think he's done well. And I think for where they are now, which is six?
Yeah.
Yeah, six. And that's 41 points. They're still in with a shout of top four. But ultimately, European football and a cup final, I guess, for them. Well, I don't know if the cup final would have been expected, but European football for them would definitely be proven. Like, I think that would be a good season for them, like 100%. And like you said, I think it will be interesting to see how Newcastle will evolve over time. Obviously, because they have the money to spend, would it be wise? You know, will we be seeing a lot of £50 million signings? Will we not? Because obviously there's enough years of much money. You can thank, oh, what's his face? Sports Direct Mike for that. Because seeing as Mike Ashley. Because he never invested in them, really. So they'll be fine, I think, FFP-wise. I'm just intrigued by this, to be honest. If I quickly go through the percentages, well, the percentage chance, apparently, according to 538.com, of relegation. So Crystal Palace, 8%, Leicester, 11%, West Ham, 14%, Wolves, 13%, Leeds, 29%, Nottingham Forest, 41%, and then rounding off the bottom three, Everton with 58%, Southampton with 62%, and Bournemouth with 64%. But however, like we all know, this is the best league in the world, which means to some degree, it's all well and good having these percentages. But if Bournemouth or Southampton start going on that absolute tear, then yeah, what I've just said is absolutely rendered moot. So yeah, I think, you know, obviously we're just going to have to take it bit by bit, week by week, and see what goes on down there. Obviously the Europa League and Champions League is coming back. It's Champions League today. Pretty sure it's in like 10 minutes. So that's obviously going to have an effect on the top. I was going to say the top four, and then realize the top four is not the top four. So it will have an effect on, obviously, the teams that are in there. Personally, I hope that helps us out, because we all know Pep wants to win Champions League, if only to prove to everyone that he can win it without Messi. So yeah, fingers crossed, I guess, for that, in that regard.
It's not going to affect top four, because Chelsea are mid-table. That's what I wanted to say.
I know, that's why I stopped saying it. I was like, top, they're literally in the middle of the table. A good run might save Potter, though, potentially, because he's like 1-0 against Leeds isn't a great result.
You're saying so?
True. Sorry, guys. Carl, what was the Leicester percentage? 11.
Give me 2 seconds. I'll just bring up Leicester. Yeah, Leicester was 11%.
And they're like second lowest?
No, they're 13th, I think.
No, in terms of the odds of...
Oh, yeah. So it was Crystal Palace with 8%, and then it was Leicester with 11.
15th, by the way.
Okay. It's mad that we're saying this.
Yeah, so guys, my prediction's coming true, man. I'm telling you.
I mean, it's been so long you've been on here, I can't
predict it. Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to have to remind me what the prediction was. Ooh, to be fair, I said this, but...
I think West Ham are going to do it, man. I think West Ham are going down.
No, West Ham will be fine. I'm saying they will be fine. West Ham should be fine because,
stupid,
admittedly, Antonio forgot what the goal looks like the other week against United. But I think they have enough in terms of being able to stay up. It's just whether they'll play decent football, right? Because the game that they lost, well, I mean, they got banged by Brighton. But before then, they were just playing negative football. It's like Moyes has got them all retreating into a shell. So whatever he's, yeah. I also think...
If you've seen their fixtures, I'm telling you, they're going down. They're done. I don't know why they've stuck with David Moyes. They play Aston Villa at home next. Fine. Postponed game, Man City away. Newcastle at home. Fulham away. Arsenal home. Liverpool home. Man United at home. Brentford away. They have some tough games. Like, that's five or six games that are just like they're going to lose.
I can see them losing all of those. Fulham away won't be easy. Brentford have won every home game this season apart from against Arsenal. So I think with Moyes, because they couldn't find anyone else, right?
Guys, they don't look at the fixtures. Take every game by game, because they will win three of those games.
I'm willing to wager with you.
Okay. Box
I'm first. Telling you, these guys are done. They're done.
Man, I'm telling you, form can sometimes go out of the window. There are all the other factors that are going to go into it. What have the teams played? Man City, Man United, the European football. You don't know what they're going to be like when they come back, depending on how far they go. Trust me. And this is This is David Moyes. And they have decent players in this one too.
David Moyes is done. He's cooked. He's finished. Their last two games of the season are against relegation rivals, which is a good and a bad thing. And just before that, they play Liverpool, Man United, and Brentford. Like, they're done. I don't know. I don't see them doing anything.
Well, that's yet to be seen. I'm going to hold that. Nice. I don't mind taking on that wager.
I'm going to channel my inner Ivan Tony, and I will take that bet for you guys. I'll broker it.
Put a tenner, Addy. We'll go £10.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, cool.
All right, cool. Well, this is live and being recorded, so can't go back on this
I
now.
I get to edit the podcast too, so I can do what I want.
And on a slight tangent from that, but following the same theme, do we think that, let's say, you know, obviously we get to the end of the season, three teams get relegated, but the remaining teams that just narrowly missed the drop will still have the same managers at the beginning of next season?
Addy can take that one.
The remaining teams that missed the drop have the same managers? Potentially.
As in, will they stick with the managers they have? Or do you think it'll be a thanks for all the memories, but we're moving on?
Potentially. I think it depends who it is. I think it depends who actually goes down and who stays up. Because if we're talking about, I mean, I'm just looking at the table now. If we're looking at
Chelsea,
if not enough,
Chelsea will change manager.
That's really just coming out swinging, isn't he?
All I'm saying is Mudrik hasn't started a game in like 4 weeks, and he was promised he was playing every game. Remember, that's all I'm going to say.
Okay, so Ade,
I think it depends on who it is. If it's
okay, let's say the league literally freeze frame. How the table looks now is how it ends up on the final day of the season. So Everton, Southampton and Bournemouth have been relegated, but they're not part of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about Leicester, West Ham and Leeds.
Leeds, Wolves, West Ham and Leicester.
So will Forest.
Wolves will keep the manager. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I think so will Leeds, the fact that they just got a new manager. So if he stays up, they'll keep him. Leicester and West Ham, I think Leicester are itching to get rid of Brendan, if I'm being honest. It's just, Who out there now do they get? I think they just want him to keep them above water, and then he is gone. Because I do think he has a shelf. That's the thing about him; he does have a shelf life. David Moyes, I think he's gone because I think the type of football that David Moyes had and what he was getting out of the players is no longer working for the profile that the squad has now developed. They've turned a few things and changed, and he needs a different type of manager now. So I don't think they will keep him, but the rest I think
will. Do you want to do another wager on West Ham's next manager?
I have no clue. I couldn't do that because I had no clue who that would be.
I think they're gonna get that guy from Rems, William Still, that guy who has no coaching license, and like
the guy that gets fined at that Reims get Reims, sorry, get fined every game when he plays. He's on the touchline,
which I don't think they will. They'll probably get him.
Well, you know what? You're discounting the fact that there'll be movement because, yes, he'll be on a lot of people's list, but he's still a risk at the end of the day. He's not been in the Premiership. So, and then Graham Potter's going to become available. And for a club that's not Chelsea, Graham Potter could be a good choice if he gets sacked. So,
yeah, I think Chelsea would probably get Zerbi, right? So then.
I don't think Brighton would want him, you know. I think if Brighton could get him back, I don't think they would because they've seen that grass was actually greener on the other side. And they're flourishing now. So I don't even think Potter would be able to go back to Brighton if Zerbi went on somewhere else. Ade, you made a point about Leeds just getting a manager so they wouldn't be likely to get another. But can I just remind you that Slaven Bilic was fired today from Watford after being there less than 6 months. And so Chris Wilder's there until the end of the season. So stranger things have happened. I know this is that's a championship, but I'm just going to say stranger things have happened. Okay, guys, thank you. Oh, wait, no, Addy, I'll let you reply.
I said true, to be fair. Stranger things have happened, and we know that turnarounds happen quickly, but I think they'll give him time because you can't go back. If you're a lead, you just don't go to the market dipping so many times unless somebody becomes available and is interested. When you're towards the top, you can, because you can offer the money and you have the club profile. But when you're there, you have to give time for a project before you start changing because these payments that they're paying these managers, they sack, it's not cheap. So, yeah.
the thing is, like you're saying, like Will Still, as an example, would be quite a cool addition to a team in the Premier League, but it's too high risk. Like, he's 30, he won't. Nobody in the Premier League is willing to take that risk.
They're risking their life with David Moyes still at the wheel. That's already a risk. Like, they've continued and they've nailed themselves to the mast with this guy. I don't see how he's still in a job, but, you know.
But do you not think that what he did last season buys him some...
That's fantastic. But then if I'm giving you £150 million and you buy a £35 million striker, £40 million striker, you go in the market in January and buy more people and you're still fighting in 16, 17, you're done, man. There's no way you can't do that.
But surely that's not David
Moyes. Fully his fault.
Okay. What I'll say in regards to Moyes is West Ham obviously did well last season and he did very well to get a good cup run. Yeah, that's fair. Good cup run in Europe with the players that he had. The problem was it was an old squad, and then West Ham in the summer went, okay, cool, we'll give you money to, you know, add some fresh blood, add some new legs into the squad. He hasn't integrated them at all. He's playing dead football. I don't think if he gets the chance for a pre-season, the owners are going to say, we trust you to move the team forward. Like, remember, Di Matteo won Champions League and got fired. So a cup run doesn't mean anything, okay? Like, he did good last season, fair, but this season, I think he's probably used up every ounce of goodwill that he had.
The other thing I would say, he's not bought bad players. Like, he's bought some really good, like, he's brought in great, like, signings, in my opinion, obviously. But if you're not getting the most out, like, Scamacca, like, he's a classic center forward that can score goals. Maybe there's the adjustment period, of course, like coming from Serie A. But the guy who is there, the center back, the guy they bought in January, like he looks really good. Agüero or something. He looks really good, solid player. And then within like 3 weeks of working with David Moyes, he looks like trash.
I think Moyes, we're at that stage, right? Where the same way with Allardyce and Redknapp, you get certain managers just start to just curdle like sour milk.
And then,
and I feel we've got there with Moyes. And this isn't even meant to be a Moyes pilot, to be honest. But
no,
he's
on fraud watch. And then I'm looking at these signings. Paqueta, €42 million. Scamacca, Agüero, Maxwell Cornet. That guy has gone into hiding. Like, nobody has remembered how good he was for Burnley last year. And this guy is not using him. Emerson from Chelsea, left back, €15 million. Danny Ings in January, €12 million. Like, this is madness.
Okay, to be fair, Ings got injured, okay? Ings got injured. But
he spent €50 million on two strikers.
Carl, what?
This is true. That's true. I mean, it's on you to buy an injury-prone striker. So, yeah, no, that's true. Okay, I just think it'll be interesting to see who gets fired because, like Ade said, he thinks that they've had enough of Rodgers at Leicester. I think Moyes is definitely not surviving West Ham in the summer. Wolves' manager seems fine. I don't know with Leeds because Leeds for me now just seem a bit all over the place. Steve Cooper will, I think, stay at Nottingham. They want to give him a proper run where he has more time with the whole like free bloody first teams that he bought. Yeah, no, Emery's going to stay going up the table. Yeah, no, I see no reason for any of the other teams to change managers. So, you know, that was just a point of curiosity. We can move on to the quiz now, guys, if you want.
Yes, please.
I've got my questions ready.
Punch David Moyes' face on my.
Well, now I know how to annoy you. I'll just say David Moyes 3 times in the mirror.
I can't believe he's doing a job.
But yeah, no, I agree. Fraud watch. Yeah, no, that's fair. Okay, quiz time. What order are we going to do this in? Kersh, Zat.
Let's
Ade?
Zat take the stage this time because he appears once every 6 months.
Okay, so just to remind everyone of the rules, there's 3 categories, quiz categories. We have true or false, which is 1 point, bang on the head, which is 2 points, and who am I, which is 3 points, but goes down to 2 points if you require a hint. Today's questions have been provided by the Footballing Brain, can be found at @_footybrain on Twitter. Thank you again for the questions. Sat, pick your poison.
Let's go with category 2, on the head.
Okay. Who holds the Premier League record for the highest number of yellow cards? Incorrect. It's actually Gareth Barry with 123.
Wow.
How many does Peter Dunne have? I know it's Gareth. Yeah, this is Gareth Barry. You think about longevity and everything.
I mean, I'd have to Google Richard Dunne and let you know, to be honest. Is it you? Oh, 74. He had 74
way
yellows.
Off, to be fair. No, very...
Is it Kush now?
Quizmaster.
No, it's up to you. Ade or Kush, who wants to go next? Okay. Ade, pick your poison. True or false, bang on the head, or who am I?
He always goes the maximum point in this guy. Oh.
Yep. Bang on the head.
Bang on the head. Okay. What was special about Balotelli's only Premier League assist?
It was the assist that won him the Premiership.
Oh, ice cold. Correct.
2 points, right?
2 points, yeah, that's 2 points. Kush, pick your poison.
Let's go bang on the head as well.
Okay. Fill that one. Yeah, that one's too hard. Okay. Who has the Premier League record for the highest number of appearances?
Gareth Barry again, surely. Or Ryan Giggs.
Yeah, that is correct. Because the other one I think would have been too hard. You wouldn't have got that. That would have just, yeah, no.
Thanks.
2 points. All right, Sat, stage is yours.
Let's go safe. Let's go.
Okay. Finally, we were speaking about pundits earlier. Jamie Carragher has more Premier League appearances than Gary Neville. True or false? Incorrect. It's true. Carragher has 508. Neville has 400.
That's a big gap.
I know. It's a very big gap.
Carragher, man.
Trust me, that's a good, like, 3 seasons and a bit. So, yeah. Ade?
True or false?
Okay. Kevin De Bruyne is the only Belgium player to have won the PFA Premier League Player of the Year award.
True.
Eden has it,
right? Incorrect. Correct.
Ah, bass. I thought he's French for some reason.
What about Lukaku?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Oh, I should have known that. Damn. Come on.
All right, Kush. Wonder who am I? All right. Can you name the player who has played with these four players? Duncan Ferguson, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Idrissa Gueye, and Raheem Sterling.
Duncan Ferguson,
mm-hmm.
Zlatan,
Idrissa Gueye, and Raheem Sterling.
This is really tough. Can I get a hint as to which club or he was most prominent?
He broke onto the scene with one club, won more trophies and prizes with the club that he then moved to.
How is that a hint? Like, what?
Because I thought the moment it actually gets really obvious.
I think so too.
Surely he must have played it. Oh, fuck.
I'll name again. Duncan Ferguson, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Idrissa Gueye, and Raheem Sterling. And you know this.
I don't, man. This is tough.
You're having a mind blank. I'm telling you know this.
Well, that's like deduction of another point there, Carl. Come on.
Yeah, no motivational speech.
What, for saying I believe in him?
I can't, man. I don't want to take up too much time. I'm just going to, I don't know. Wayne Rooney or someone? I don't know.
What?
No way. Seriously?
Yeah, it's Rooney.
I just thought of United and like Everton.
Ferguson and Gueye would have been Everton.
Ibra United
and Sterling for England.
I literally just thought United and Everton, like the crossover of Zlatan and Ferguson. So, well, anyway, 2 points. I'll take it.
Sat, chance to get some points on the board.
Yeah, I mean, do I have a choice of what I want?
No, you don't. It's just who am I? Okay. Can you name the player that has played with these four players? Luka Modric, Jorginho, Antoine Griezmann, and wow, I can't actually remember his first name, Dybala.
Paolo.
Thank you.
So just say those again, sorry.
Luka Modric, Jorginho, Antoine Griezmann, and you say Paolo?
Yeah.
Dybala? Bite ball up, blah, 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 blah.
Yep, yep.
So that's like really hard.
He's just a way to give the clue, CJ, is where did they, like, what club did they play at, if that makes sense.
What club are they most famous for playing at?
Yeah, or like, if it's an obscure player, like Griezmann, like, where did they play, like, together? It's a big hint, but you need to find the weird.
Okay, most famous for playing at, oh, shit, this one's kind of hard.
I feel like you hate me, Carla.
Making the
no, I actually don't. That. Trust me, I'm trying to. Quizmaster's thinking here, okay? Okay, so probably most famous for his achievements at Juventus. Also, I can't stand him.
That's not narrowing it down at all, bruv.
Yes, it is. Trust me, it really is. Because I've bitched about him in the group chat so many times.
Mate, you bitch about so many players. You and I are
that is the true. Biggest. That is true. Okay, maybe Quizmaster more of a bitch than he realizes. Damn.
Okay, so just repeat that. So it's Dybala, that's Griezmann.
Dybala, Antoine Griezmann, Jorginho, and Luka Modric. So you could describe him as a bit of a journeyman.
I'm never going to get this. I absolutely have no idea. Really don't. Let's just say, must be, you said at Juventus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pogba?
No, it was Alvaro Morata.
I'd never got that, to be fair. I get it now. I know you bitch about him a lot, to be fair.
First, if I said striker, I would just give it away, right?
You could have just said Spanish player.
Even if you had said played with Griezmann at Atletico, it would still been hard. Like, that's a hard question. No, I love
it. Okay.
The thing is, to be honest, I blanked on the Jorginho one. I blanked on that. I didn't realize you played it. I didn't remember you played it. Yeah, exactly.
No, well done, CJ. Sat at 0 points.
I'm convinced this guy has just been involved in money laundering at all these clubs he's played at. Let's be quiet. I don't want to get Kush banned from podcasting for the rest of his life.
Voice here, man.
So there's one left now, isn't there? And this is Who Am I, correct?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Can you name the player who has played with Samuel Eto'o, Peter Crouch, Kylian Mbappe, and Robert Lewandowski? Is it Robert? I think it's Robert.
There's a player who's played with Crouch, Mbappe, and Lewandowski. And wow. Player. Okay, I need to think this.
And Kylian. Killy.
I think I know the answer to this.
Mbappe, Crouch, Lewandowski.
I didn't give this one to Kush because he would have got it way too easily.
If Ali doesn't get it, I know I don't want points for this, but if he doesn't get it, I want to try. No points, though.
That's.
I mean, it's not like you're going to win even if you get the points, and so.
No points. He said it twice.
Kush just digging it in even more.
Lewandowski, Mbappe, Crouch.
Crouch and Eto'o.
Eto'o one is throwing me. God. Eto'o. That's...
Oh. Okay, then ignore Eto'o. I'm thinking of the other three.
I need a clue on this one, because...
Okay. What's the best?
Eto'o, Crouch.
He's probably most famous for his time in the Premier League before he moved to France, which would have been PSG. Derided for his time.
Man, giving away clues like they're candy, man.
Okay. Please, when you ask triple-double clues. I'm going to have to pass on this one. I can't think of a player that's... I'm just going to say Maxwell.
No.
Okay. Can I go?
Sat, do you want to have a go?
I'm going to be like super embarrassed if this is wrong. Is it our favorite Cameroonian forward that plays for Bayern Munich?
Yep.
Choupo-Moting. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He's got a new contract as well.
Wait, Carl, I wouldn't say his most famous time was at Stoke. He's been all right.
Yeah, but he was derided for being shit at Stoke before he went to PSG.
Not too fair. He's been very good at Bayern.
German.
Right? I mean, even I could be good. Yeah.
everyone was shocked when he went to PSG. Not didn't even go into Bayern after.
That was tough crowd. Well, tough crowd.
It's a good question, Michael. It's a great question.
It's a good. Who am I? Just doesn't.
Carl, my one was shit, but the rest of them have been really good.
So what the?
I guess that means in last place, Wooden Spoon. Zat, Bernade with 2 points, and Kush is this week's winner with 4 points.
Yeah, baby. There we go. That's what we like to hear.
Is that why you retired, Kirsten?
Trying to give you guys a chance, man. All right. Thank you, guys.
Sports update. Benfica scored.
And Raheem Sterling missed a huge chance. That was so bad. So bad.
I have to watch the football.
So the club with the £1 billion pound academy scored.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. £1 billion.
Wait, did they score? Or did it get wiped off? I'm seeing it says no. Okay, maybe an offside then. I think it got disallowed.
Yeah.
Is that Champions League?
Yep.
I thought
Chelsea, Dortmund, and Benfica Bruges.
Ah, yes.
Scotty Parker.
Benfica should be.
Come on, Scotty Parker. Anyway. All right.
Anyway, guys, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it, as always.
Try to get it out tonight / in the morning. Appreciate it.
Kalil, better question next time, yeah? Dude.
You see, it's always people that lose that say these kind of things, but yeah, sure.
It's fine. You have 6 months to prepare, don't worry.
Take care, everyone.
Thanks.
See you.
Figo's having to operate even more attackingly now. He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Figo.